Welcome everyone to this talk about how to live off game development in this country, like I know. My name is Nelly Kodis. I'm one of the founders and director of Battleship. I'm going to be talking about the company a bit later, but first I have to thank Microsoft for having me. It's a great honor and the event is going beautifully. So let's start off talking just a little bit about why I love games. Probably just the same as yourselves. But let's go back in time to 1980. There were two major things that happened in this year. First one, it's the year that Pac-Man was released on the arcades. And second, I was born. So this is 1980. You can see how old I am. I had this computer when I was about 6 years old, I think. It's called an MSX. Most of you probably don't know about it. It was common that most people had Spectrums at this time, but I had an MSX, and MS stands for Microsoft, curiously. So it was a computer developed by Microsoft Japan, and then had some success in Europe, but it's relatively unknown. So I was 6 years old, and I was playing some games in this computer. It was a bit better than the Spectrum. It had 16 colors and better sound, but basically the same kind of computer. So also, thank you Microsoft for creating the MSX. A few years later, I got an upgrade, also an MSX, MSX 2. This computer was quite advanced for its time. It had a disk drive. I don't recall any other computers at that same time having disk drives. Had cartridge slots and still cassettes. You could play games with cassettes. But I'm bringing this because both the MSX 1 and 2, when you boot those computers up, you would start immediately on BASIC. You could write BASIC commands and start coding immediately as soon as you started off the computer. This was common in many computers in that age. So this is a small example of some code. So basically, from the age of 6, 7, I was already seeing code, checking the code that was in the games that I played. And I got really interested in programming, trying to understand how programming works. So also, thank you MSX for creating MSX. Thank you Microsoft for creating MSX Basic, because it was really, I only realized this when I was preparing this presentation, that I really owe a lot to Microsoft for being here today. So a few years later, now we are in the 90s, I finally got my first computer, my first PC, and my life was changed forever. And of course, this is the 90s, so it was running MS-DOS. And I became fascinated by things like this, and 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 this, this. Oh, my whole presentation is just screenshots of what began. And this. My favorite game of all time, Lands of Lore, from defunct Westwood Studios. Still my favorite today. This, and this, and this. So basically, I was completely obsessed with video games. All the games that you saw in this little piece were released in about 4 years. So all those different themes and mechanics were present on these games in between 94 and 98. So I knew that I wanted to make video games basically at this time. And what was really my passion was knowing that games was not just programming, okay? It's joining the three components that are really interesting for me, that is art, science, and business. Also, and because of this fact, necessarily, the teams working on video games were necessarily multidisciplinary. So that was really interesting for me as well, knowing that if I ever went to work on video games, the people next to me would be artists, composers, writers, and all of that. So that was really compelling for me. So this was my ambition very early on. I was like 14 years of age. And I don't think most people took me for serious when I said I wanted to make video games when I was older. But I guess I managed to do it. So, quick notes about what I just said. Games are nice. Microsoft is cool. So, how did I, what was my path to start working on video games? Well, I was 14, so I had to go to school. Basically, I'm still talking about high school. And after high school was done, it was time to go to the university. And I was interested in programming, so obviously I searched for a degree on computer science. So I joined FCT. And got there, it was 98, yeah. I had my first contact with the internet. It's not like today that you have internet at home. Back then you had to go to the university and use the shared computers to surf the web. And one of the first things that I did was, okay, let me search in Alta Vista back then, what companies are making games in Portugal? And basically I realized, oh my God, there's no one making games in Portugal. Actually, I thought I was the only person in the world who wanted to make games. It was really strange, in the world, not in Portugal. So basically, to work somewhere else. It wasn't really a choice to work in video games in Portugal. But to go abroad and join a company, you had to have a tech demo or have released one or two titles before you join a big company. So that was really not a possibility. So I was at the university, so I kept studying computer science. But while I was studying computer science, there are always some, can always select to learn about, I don't know, computer graphics, stuff a bit more specific to video games. So every time I could, I went to sites like these two. And I tried to really, because the course was never focused on video games, of course, back in 99, 2000. So you really had to make the effort to learn by yourself about video games, video game development. So I was, I think, in the fourth year. So I went on vacation to Vila Nova de Mil Fontes. I was there in the beach, and I was a bit bored. And I thought, okay, let me get buy a magazine. I used to buy Megascore back then. And I was reading through the pages, and I got to one page that said, cover, a game developed by Portuguese developers for mobile phones. And I was like, what? Portuguese? Where is this taking place? A company called Y-Dreams, and they're located in my campus. And I had no idea. My reaction was basically this. So it became my kind of an obsession, trying to find out, okay, what company is this, Y-Dreams? Who are these people? When I came back to university after my vacation, I looked for their building and I found it. And okay, it was my almost a personal goal. Okay, I have to meet these people and try to work with them because they're making games and they're probably the only ones making games in Portugal. Well, I was in the fourth year and I thought, okay, I'm not going to knock on their door. I'll just keep studying and let's see because I don't know that much about video games yet. So final year, it was time to pick a project. It's usually common when you're in your final year in university. And you have basically three choices back then, at least on my university. So you could do research projects in the university, artificial intelligence or computer graphics, whatever. You could work for a company, you make an internship. That was the most common. And also, you could propose your own project. So that was that for me was what made most sense because I could pick a project that was related to video games. So basically, I thought, okay, I'm going to propose a project where I'm going to make a video game, and that's my project at the university. But making a video game, tools that you have today. So I thought, okay, I have to get at least four more people with me, four more finalists. Let's make a game like an RTS style game like StarCraft, where each person would have his own role. Graphics, networking, artificial intelligence, stuff like that. And I was really surprised that many of my colleagues were reluctant in working with me on a project of video games. I was asking everyone if they wanted to go aboard this project. And there were cases where some of them told me, well, my mom doesn't let me work on video games. So I was, okay, I don't understand that. But I eventually got the people I needed, 5 people out of 100 or whatever. And we presented this idea, okay, we want to make a video game as our final project. Let's talk to some teachers. And we had some good support from some of them. But they told, okay, so we did that. We prepared the presentation, and the result wasn't that great. So we went back to the teachers that, well, the reasons was it was too complex of a project for a final project in the university. They would rather have students make simpler projects rather than a video game, especially a complex one, with 5 people involved. So we went back to the teachers that liked the idea and asked them for guidance. And one of them told us, you know, I know someone, one of my best friends works on a company that maybe would be interested in having you guys work on your project inside your company. And if that's the case, the university cannot reject your proposal because there's a company making the formal proposal to the university. And his friend of the founders of White Dreams. So this was really strange for me that all these coincidences were happening. So we made the pitch to White Dreams, to the company. They went there, we met them, we presented the same pitch, and we had the same reply. Basically, they weren't interested in making a PC game. They weren't really into it. They were more into mobile games back then. But they told us this. Would you rather make a 3D game engine for mobile phones? Back then, there wasn't any 3D game engine that I know. They asked us, making the StarCraft-like game. And of course, if you're going to work on video games, perfect. So basically, we did the project with them for 3 months. We had a 3D game engine fully working after that. And I was invited, as well as one of my colleagues, to stay at White Dreams working there as programmers. And we were invited particularly to work on Undercover 2, which was the sequel to that game that led me to know White Dreams, which is curious. So, invest in your education, obviously, not necessarily university. You can learn a lot by yourself nowadays. Follow your dreams. Okay, just because no one else is doing it, okay, you can still try to push it a bit and see where it leads you. There are amazing coincidences, okay, and I could make a presentation just about coincidences and compromise. When they asked us if we wanted to make the 3D game engine for mobile phones, I really didn't care about mobile phones. I hated them, actually. This was in 2004, I think. It didn't mean anything to me, but I saw it as a way to learn more about video games and on them. So you have to know how to compromise. So 2004, and I was fortunately enough to start working on video games. Like some other companies back then that were doing video games, White Dreams wasn't the only one. I then learned about a few others. But basically, video games wasn't the core business of the company. It couldn't be, okay? Even today, it's a bit difficult. But they have one of their departments. Besides video games, they did other stuff. But basically, it's a big company with, I think they had 60 people back then. But a few of those people were working on video games, and the remainder of the company were working on all sorts of projects. But they had all the positions that you usually find on a video game studio working there. So I got to meet designers, testers, artists, producers, and so on. So I told you that we were working on a mobile game engine. And I was working there, and of course, back then the phones were like this. And it was really complicated. Devices were very fragmented. All the screens were very different. The input, all the capabilities were all over the place. So it was really difficult to work on Undercover 2 to cover all the devices that were back then available. Also, I didn't say, but Undercover 1 and 2 were based, are location-based games, where your location, your real location, takes place in the action. So if you are here, you are doing a mission that is available only on your physical location. So that was also a bit difficult because there was no one else doing that kind of stuff. Also, we were developing on Java, and even Java was fragmented, which means coding some lines of code in one device would have one output, and the same lines of code in another device could have a different output. That was really a pain. So technically speaking, it was really difficult to work on mobile games back in 2004-05. But after 1 year, around 1 year working on the game, Undercover 2 was released. It's basically an RPG with location-based features, as I said. Very simple one. And we did a soft launch, we could call it like that nowadays. And in terms of business, it wasn't really great. It was terrible, actually. So the company, the owners told us, well, we should rework on the game, improve it, and make it better, and then the final release will surely be better. And for us, this was a nightmare, going back to that game again with the same issues with Java and all that I said. But we worked, I don't know if it was another year. It was really too long. But we revamped the game and changed a lot of the things. And this is the final product. And guess what? It wasn't great either. But it opened some interesting doors. When we released the game, BBC came to Y-Dreams and said they have a TV series. I think it was called, Spooks. And they told us, we want a video game for mobile phones based on the same setting as a series. So we developed the game for them using the same technology that we did for Undercover 2. And they basically paid all the development costs we had with Undercover 2, although it was, in terms of sales, a very big disappointment. We ended up covering those costs with this project. We continued working on location-based games. Wall Street Fighter was another project we worked on. Where location was not that much important in the game. It was almost a regular fighting game, but in the end, it also wasn't very good in terms of sales. Perhaps the most well-known game developed by Y-Dreams was Cristiano Ronaldo Underworld Football, which had some success, but given the amount of resources that were working on the game, still the same problem. So we are now in 2007. I was at Y-Dreams for 3.5 years, I think. And for me, it was time to go. Because they were starting to feel that video games weren't really something they could do very great. So they were starting to cut down the video game team. And so I decided it was time for me to go. And I went to Game Invest as a lead programmer. And Game Invest was a whole different beast. It was the first company that I know of which their core business was entirely focused on video games. So they had funding, and all that funding was just to spend on video games. There weren't applications, websites, whatever, just video games. So for me, that was wonderful. And they were starting a small, not that small, but a development team just focused on video games. So they picked a lot of people from Y-Dreams and other studios. But, and I'll start the problems. Game Invest was focused on, was focused on way too many platforms. We had development kits for all these platforms, and we were actually developing games for all of those. It's a bit crazy, a team of 20 people, I think, back then, working on a ton of games. Not necessarily multi-platform games, but really games for each platform. It was really crazy. So there was a big problem, a real focus problem. Also, feature creep was happening on all those projects. Feature creep means that you're working on a project and you keep adding more features and more features and more features. You never have a final product. So, add this issue. So, two terrible news for the team that was working in there. But after, I don't know, 2 years maybe, we were working on several games that should only take like about 6 to 8 months to develop, and 2 years after working on those games, they were still unfinished, which is bad, of course. So there was some remodeling on the company, a real restructuring, and I was promoted, I guess, to general manager, what was it in English?
Production manager,
that's it. The idea was, okay, let's see what we are doing badly and try to reorganize the team that we have and be more focused. So one of the first things that we decided was, okay, let's drop all the other platforms and let's focus on just one. And we selected the PC, mainly because we already, the games that were more close to be finished were PC games. We were never very good in the consoles, and we had some good relationship with some publishers that still are focused on PC games, PC/Mac. Also, we decided, let's not work on the project until it's done and then look for a publisher, which was also a very bad thing to do. Let's work on prototypes, then go to the fairs, present the prototypes to the publishers, and only if they are interested, let's continue working on those projects after there's a contract. Okay? If there's no interest in a prototype, let's just kill that project and start a new one. That was another of the things we decided. So we then released a number of games. This one actually is multi-platform. It was released for the Nintendo Wii, Nintendo DS. But finally, we were getting projects out there, published projects. So, and these are a few examples. And then, okay, things were finally going well. But then something happened. The market of that kind of games, the PC downloadable market, really exploded when the competition got fierce. Competition from Eastern Europe and Asia. It was really difficult for us with our wages here in Portugal to compete with the kind of stuff that was being done on these countries. So we had a real problem. We can't keep doing these games and spending like 80,000 euros when there's someone doing them for half the price. The publisher won't work with us. They'll always prefer to work with the competition. And then it was decided that we should start outsourcing most of the artwork. It would be done in-house, but most of the assets would be done outside. So I decided, okay, it's time for me to go again, and it really wasn't my thing, so I decided to leave, and here we are now in Battleship. I'll talk about it now. So some lessons. Innovation isn't necessarily good. Wild Dreams kept pushing, working on location-based games, and it really wasn't that good. Today it makes much more sense because everyone has GPS, but back then not everyone had. What a surprise, you can't keep working on a game for 2 years and raising the costs. There's just no way you'll get your money back unless it's a hit. And depending on a hit is really bad for your company. You have to focus. Focus on one kind of project, on one genre or one platform, and try to make it as efficiently as possible. Don't feature creep. You decide your project is this, focus on that, and maybe if it's successful, in the sequel you can add more features. Don't try to add features just because they sound cool or because you wake up in the morning and decide that you should add something. Also, try to learn from others' mistakes. There will be plenty of time for you to make your own mistakes, but try to learn about the history of other companies, see where they failed. You want to avoid those mistakes, and there's no reason for you to go down the same road. Okay, so Battleship. How did this start? When I was working both on WhyDreams and GameInvest, we were usually contacted by other companies because these were well-known companies in Portugal. So brands would contact us and ask us if we could develop games for them. Games to promote their products and services, stuff like that. And the reference they gave us usually would be games like this, Tomb Raider, Pro Evolution Soccer. They would say, okay, we want games like this, but with, I don't know, some brand. And obviously we knew that they wouldn't have the budget to, nor would we have the knowledge to do such games. But when we asked them, okay, how much budget do you have to invest on these games that you want? When they told us the price, we had to lower their expectations to something more or less like this. Even so, we made the budget to them. And really, it was so little money that it made no sense for these companies to work on those projects. Both GameInvest and WhyDreams, they had 60 people, 40 to 60 people. And with a team that big, anything under 100,000 euros won't pay more than 2 months of wages, maybe 1-2 months, okay? So it wouldn't make sense to make little games, puzzle games that we would sell for 2,000 euros, 3,000 euros, it just wouldn't work. So we had to reject those projects. But that made me think, and my future partner, Pedro Candelaria, that perhaps this is a business opportunity. We are being contacted by so many companies. I want to make low budget games, 5,000 euros, sometimes a bit more. So let's start a company with minimal investment and with basically let's try to make a company in the cloud, which basically means let's not have an office, let's not have many expenses, and only hire people when needed for specific projects. So basically reduce the structure as much as possible. So this was our goal when we created Battleship. And at first, actually, Battleship was founded when we were still working on GameInvest. Okay, so this was a side project for some time. And for the first 6 months after we founded Battleship, we went to a lot of meetings. We met a lot of those potential customers that made us create the company. And actually, we had no success in any proposal. So we were starting to wonder if this made any sense. And then one of the Portuguese major brands, Olá, they had a website called Club Olá with many mini games for kids. They wanted to revamp their site, made it a better experience for the kids. The site was basically the same for some years, and they wanted to really make it more dynamic. So they contacted a company called Publiplasma to remake the website and make more interesting games. And since Publiplasma were just specialists in making websites but not video games, they had no knowledge of video games, they obviously went to WhyDreams asking for a proposal to make video games for that website. WhyDreams was no longer in the business of making video games, but they said, well, you know what? There are some people that used to work with us. They now have their own company. So talk to them about game development. And this is how our first project came to be, which is actually funny because it's not the simple kind of game that we wanted to make. We made a proposal for Planet Olá, but it would be a social game for children. So a big project, not a very simple one. But it got greenlit. So for us, it was the first project that we ever sold. And the end result was something like this. We worked on it for a year. So it's basically a social game where you can have your avatar and change your clothes and can buy stuff. And each building is a different activity, different. It could be a game or something else. So we worked on this throughout 2009, I believe. This is an example of one of the mini games within the major game. So by the end of 2009, we finally released the game, and it was mildly successful. And so they greenlit further further work on that project. They wanted to add more content throughout 2010. And it was by then that we decided, okay, so maybe we can finally focus just on Battleship and leave Game Invest. And so in 2010, we added more content to this game, more regions, more buildings, and etc. So as I said, this was kind of a big project. You could have your own home and get paintings and different lights and stuff like that. More mini games. And the game was being successful. So by the end of 2011, they asked us to keep working on the game for another year. So actually, starting a company is very easy. You can do it in like 5 minutes. But starting a business isn't. The day you fund your company, you'll start having expenses. But you have to be prepared that it can take months to have your first sale. So nowadays, what we usually recommend to people that ask us for guidance is delay creating your company until you have a project, or at least some potential partners. And so this is very important. While you are working on a product, which you don't know yet if it's going to be sold or successful, if you can have another source of income, it's great. Having another job would be perfect, but doing translations, whatever. Because it can take a lot of time until you get a project sold. Or you can always try to find for investment. That's a whole different thing that I won't cover here. Also, don't forget that connections that you make on a certain job, they can have a difference in your life years later. So make sure you respect everyone, try to meet everyone you can, because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. And Battleship is a perfect example of that. So another interesting story. When I was working at Game Invest, when I was a producer, we had a game that was being published by Game House, and there was a producer on the publisher side. And we used to talk on a daily basis. And some years later, he left the company and went to another one called Future Ads. And at the same time, basically when he entered Future Ads, they were looking for companies to develop flash games, simple flash games for their own flash games portal. And they were looking for developers to make those games. So we had a good relationship, so he sent me a message through LinkedIn and asked me if I was interested in pitching a budget with some ideas for simple flash games. And me and my partner, we were so tired of making budgets to pitching to so many companies in Portugal, and they never went anywhere. So we made a really, really tiny budget to this proposal, really ridiculous amount of money. Just hoping, okay, let's see if they're interested in working with us, and if this goes forward, then in the next project we'll ask for more money. So let's see how it goes. And their reply was, can you actually make the game with more money? That never happened, of course, with other clients, especially in Portugal. And we agreed to it. What they were saying basically was, we want the game to have more quality than you are probably imagining. So they told us to increase the budget for the game. The game in question was this one. Very simple game. You just have to throw the basketball into the net. Very simple one. But this was the kind of games that we wanted to make when we started Battleship. Really simple games done really quickly and with very small resources. So they liked working with us. And since they were paying for the production and they wanted us to increase the budget, we saw it as an opportunity to start working on our own technology. So let's not just make the game, let's start making a framework to reuse in other games. And hence was born Ignition. After that game was done, they hired us to do another game, one of my favorites that I worked on. Very simple game. I can show you all these games in the booth downstairs if you want. I won't spend much time here. But a real fun game. And we were hired to do some usual clones that you all know. So basically, the relationship with this company was very good, very fruitful. They hired us for Yet One More Game. This was the most playable, the most played game we ever had. I think 10 million times, stuff like that. I don't recall the numbers. And finally, Goat Kart Racer. Most of these are available to play on our website. And throughout each iteration of new game, our technology was getting much better with more features. Also, don't forget that we were working on Planetola simultaneously, so we were adding more content, achievements, and many other things. So, again, connections are really important. We went international because of a connection I had 2 years earlier. Always be professional and respectful to everyone because, as I said, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But make sure to give your best on each project, as we did with the first one with this new partner, and we ended up being contracted for 6 more games with them. Okay? And try as much as possible to work on your technology so that the next game is done in a fraction of the time with a fraction of the cost. That's also very important. Okay, so we're now finally in 2012, and things were great for us. We had that, we had Planetola, was going well. We had that international company that wanted 3 more games, I think, yeah, 3 more games back then. And we also had a number of budgets that we were replying. So it was really promising. But obviously, as I skipped the slide, it was catastrophic in 2012. Ola had to cancel further updates to Planet Ola. They decided to leave the game online, but didn't want to pay for further development. Our client for which we developed all those games also canceled all the feature games that we were discussing with them. And there was a ton of other projects that we were also, we were approached by other companies and we were working on budgets and all of those were canceled. All of these in about 2 weeks' time, okay? So we had a really promising year. Our expectation was by the end of that year make more money than all the years before. And suddenly, oh no, we have no projects. So we thought, well, maybe it's not that bad. It could be liberating not having those clients. Let's try and be free. Let's rethink our strategy. So we thought, let's go independent and let's go mobile. Let's go enter the mobile wars. We decided to start developing games for Android and iOS. Sorry, Microsoft. So we had to also, it was our first time working on mobile games, so okay, which technology should we pick? And there was this technology, Adobe Air, you probably know about it, and we decided, let's test it, let's see how it works. Because all our games so far had been developed in Flash, ActionScript, so let's make a simple test. Picking one of our games and recompile it into Adobe Air and see if it was really true that the same code would run on different devices. So we picked a DualShot. We recompiled it. It failed. Actually, it didn't fail. It worked. It ran, but it wasn't playable. We had to change one line of code, and the game worked immediately on iOS and Android. So for us, it was a done deal. Okay, this means that all the technology we have done so far in Ignition, we can start using it in mobile devices. And so we decided, let's start working on our first mobile game using Ignition as its basis, which still needed a lot of new features added. But this was our first mobile game. We worked on it for 9 months with a team of 6 people, I think, at the most. It's an endless runner. You can test it downstairs if you want. We had to learn a lot about technology and new concepts related to mobile games. All of these are probably concepts you are aware of. But commercially, we launched the game. It wasn't really a success. Okay, it gave some money. And the interesting thing about mobile games is that you keep getting money. Even 2 years after the game was released, we still are getting money from that game. Our second mobile game was done much faster with a smaller team, Zombie Apocalypse. You can also try it if you want. A button smasher, basically. And again, the same problem. Retro Ball was our latest fully independent game that we made for mobile. Okay, simple mechanics. I invite you to go downstairs afterwards and play a match against me. And same problem. We were learning with this process and making games each time more faster. I think Retro Ball took just 4 months to develop and just two people. So at least the costs were dropping, so that's good. And also, we didn't leave the Flash gaming totally out. We still work on a couple more games. This one, a time management, and one kind of similar to Retro Ball, but in Flash. And we sold some licenses of these two games to some portals, but still not that much money. Okay, don't forget this. Even if you are feeling that basically you are doing well, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. Okay, all your clients can just leave you all of a sudden. Being independent, okay, sets you free, that's true, but it's really risky. Be prepared to have no income, especially if you are the owners of the company. You'll be paying wages to everyone that you need, artists, designers, whatever. But you are so afraid that you won't have enough money to finish the project that you'll have to delay payments to yourself. That's usually what happens. Don't forget that you have to cover for expenses, that if you don't have any investment from outside, you'll have to pay your expenses some way. So basically what we learned was that without marketing or partnerships to give you visibility, you could release a ton of games, even if they're very good, but it's really difficult for them to be found by the players. And also, keep your projects reasonably simple. Don't start working. Many of you do that. I advise against, as your first project, working on a 6-plus size team and working on it for a year or stuff like that. Start with something simple, release it on the different stores and see what happens. You'll always learn from the process and you can later make the game of your dreams. Don't start with the game of your dreams as your first project. And especially nowadays with downloadable content, release your game in just one location, see how it works. Get as much analytics as possible, and then improve the game, and finally release it to the whole world. So releasing these independent games put Battleship on the spotlight. We were invited to go to many conferences. The media went to talk with us. And recently, we've been reapproached by many clients again, as it happened in the past. And currently, we are developing two educational web games in HTML5, one online serious game. Unfortunately, I can't share anything about those projects, or I'll be drowning lawyers. We're also developing another mobile casual game for a client. And for the first time, we are developing game artwork for yet another client. So we have four clients simultaneously nowadays. Also, don't forget that in the mobile space, each game that you release, you have to keep adding improvements, content, balance the economy, checking for compatibility with other devices and other operating systems. If there are more app stores, you have to support those. Because nowadays, you have heard this a lot, probably, games are a service. So you release the game. Some people say that once you release the game, your work finally starts on that game. We're also working on a few projects that we had to sometimes have to pause them. Whenever we have a client, we have to pause our internal projects because obviously clients have a tight schedule. But one of those, I can give you a small hint. And our goal is, after we finish the projects for our current clients, we'll go back to our internal projects, our fully independent games, and that will put us again on the spotlight and probably make us a little bigger, and the process will repeat itself. Work on independent games, that will bring more clients, and we prefer this line of work instead of going searching for funding which is something that I'm kind of afraid of, actually. I prefer to work to clients instead of investors. So developing your own games will always give you visibility and credibility if you do them right, obviously. Clients are a great way to get funding. I think this is sometimes overlooked. If you're starting a company, I think working for clients, it's not that bad. When you get money from those clients, invest it wisely. Don't spend it all in your dream project, as I said. Do smaller projects where you learn from what you're doing. So it's really possible to live off of video game development here in Portugal, but be prepared that it really takes a lot of hard work and perseverance. And at times, you'll have highs and lows. They will happen interchangeably. Sometimes the lows are very low and the highs are very high. But once that happens, once you have that huge high, obviously it will be much harder to get into that low again. So I hope you learned something from my experience. Thank you, and I really, really wish you good luck to every one of you. And if you want to meet me outside so we can talk a little bit, because we are already over the time, I can answer your questions outside, okay? So thank you.